Well, I believe it's a fact that everybody wants to be happy. Happiness is the great human pursuit. Blaise Pascal said, "All men seek happiness. This is without exception. Whatever different means they use, they all tend to this end. The cause of some going to war and of others avoiding it is the same desire in both, to be happy. This is the motive for every action of every man, even those who hang themselves." We all want to be happy. And evidence of our pursuit of happiness is everywhere. In our culture, many of us, we've bought into the idea that happiness will come through stuff. If we accumulate stuff, if we go to the right places, if we have the wonderful experiences, we will be happy. And I believe that's why gambling is an addiction. Millions of people spend money that is hard to come by on something that there's virtually no chance of them winning. We see on television people in these game shows where they have a sure $250,000, but they'll risk that with the idea, possibility of winning $1,000,000. And we buy the lie that we will be happy if we just have that next thing. The newer car, bigger car, better car, boat, house, vacation, whatever it is. I don't know if you're into the lottery or not, but I have some bad news for you. Researchers have found out that if you travel 10 miles to buy a lottery ticket, that you are 3 times more likely to die in a car accident on the way to buy the ticket than you are to win the jackpot. And yet, despite this obvious fact that it's almost impossible to win, 1/4 of all Americans run off to do it. Why? Because we want that jackpot, because we believe it will change our lives and make us happy. In 2018, Harvard Business School undertook a first-of-its-kind study. They researched 4,000 millionaires in the United States, and they asked them several questions. They said, how much do you have currently? How much money do you have? How happy are you on a scale of 1 to 10? 10 being, you know, ecstatically happy. 10 is the happy scale, the happy side. And then how much money they thought it would take, how much do they need to get to a 10 if you're not there? Well, shockingly, or maybe not shockingly, 26%, this is the largest percentage of response, said that they would need 10 times more than what they currently have. That was the largest amount they could ask for. They said they need 10 times more than they have. 24% chose 5 times more. 23% said 2 times more until you realize there's not too many people left. Only 13% said they currently have enough to be happy. And the surprising thing about that, at least to some, is that it didn't matter whether the person had like 1.2 million or 102 million. The responses were the same across the board. So the amount you have seems to have very little correlation to the amount you believe it will take to make you happy. So I wonder today, as we get started and begin to look in the scriptures, what is the means you are pursuing to find happiness? In your mind, what do you think it will take to finally enter into happiness? Is it winning the lottery? Or landing the dream job? Maybe finding your soulmate? There's so many things, right, that are out there in front of us, and we're always running and on this treadmill trying to get there to finally reach happiness. It's nothing new. The teacher, the author of Ecclesiastes, he was the same way. He wanted to be happy. He wanted to find satisfaction. He wanted fulfillment in his life, and he couldn't seem to find it. And so he went on a search, this epic quest. And he wrote it down. He said, this is what I'm going to try this first. Then I'm going to try this. All in pursuit of finding that nirvana, that happy place. So I want to follow along in his journey today. We're going to look at four things that he tried to find happiness, four different experiences that he pursued, and I believe they are still in use today. I hope that at the end, as we find the answer to the question, what does it take to find happiness, that we will all be able to heartily engage in that. So let's begin. If you have your Bible with you or your device, open Ecclesiastes, right after Psalms, then Proverbs, then comes Ecclesiastes. We're going to be jumping in the middle of chapter 1 and going all the way to the end of chapter 2 today. I'm going to go kind of fast through this. So I'm going to tell you there are four different ways that he tried to find happiness. The first is through wisdom. Wisdom. He said in the beginning of our text today, verse 12 of 1, I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I devoted myself to the study and to explore by wisdom all that is done under heaven. So this wasn't just an extracurricular thing. He said, I devoted myself to this. I'm going to try to figure it out, through my head, intellectually, through wisdom. I'm going to try to figure it all out. And his conclusion right away in 13b, I love how the ESV translates it. It says, it's all an unhappy business. Or the NIV says, a heavy burden. Well, why was it? He said, I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless. They're chasing after the wind. And he uses a proverb to kind of wrap up this in verse 15. What is twisted cannot be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. A proverb. And it's so true, is it not? The world is very twisted. I mean, if we ever doubted that, 2020 is evidence, right, that the world is broken beyond repair. And what he's saying is we can't figure out how that works or why that is that way. It doesn't make sense. And you probably have wrestled with it as well. We ask ourselves, why does cancer strike this person and not these people? And the tornado, why did it destroy the homes on this side of the street and left these untouched? Figure it out. You can't. You can't figure it out. It doesn't make sense. That's what he's saying here. And it's all chasing after wind. And then he tried pleasure in the beginning of chapter 2. And again, you'll see the transition. I thought in my heart. See, he's sharing with you this pursuit, this journey. I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you, my heart, with pleasure to find out what is good. Well, now we're talking, right? Okay, this is good. It's going to be good. I'm going to try pleasure. And I want to simply begin by saying what he's talking about here. He's not talking about sin, because pleasure is not bad in and of itself, amen? God designed us to enjoy things, and there's pleasure at the right hand of God. So he's not doing something sinful just in pursuing pleasure, but he's after it, man. He's going after it. And he tries a lot of different things. Laughter, I said, is foolish. What does pleasure accomplish? It's not really working. So he tries alcohol. He tried wine. I tried cheering myself with wine, embracing folly, my mind still guiding me with wisdom. And he's like, nope, it's not working. That didn't do it. So then he tried accomplishments and projects. Verse 4, I undertook great projects. I built houses for myself, planted vineyards. Just underline for now. We'll come back to it, the word myself. I did this for myself. And notice how many times it refers to I. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water groves of flourishing trees. So he's like, I'm going to do a lot of great stuff and have a lot of personal accomplishments. No, doesn't work. He tries wealth. I bought male and female slaves and other slaves who were born in my house. I also owned more herds and flocks than anyone in Jerusalem before me. I amassed silver and gold for, there it is again, myself and the treasures of kings and provinces. I mean, he's got mountains, barns filled with his wealth. The fields are full of all of his flocks and his herds. He's got it all in pursuit to test his heart, to find something that's finally going to satisfy him and make him happy. But that wasn't all. He tried the arts. I acquired men and women singers. Entertainment. He's got the latest music. He's got it all there. And then, of course, the pursuit wouldn't be complete if it wasn't for sex, right? So then he said, I tried that as well. I tried and I had the delights of the heart of man, this harem. And if you think of sexual, our culture being saturated in sex, I'd say there's no one who had more access to that and freedom with that than Solomon. And he's after it all. He held himself back from nothing in pursuit of this. He's testing his heart. Where is the answer? How am I going to find it? I tried wisdom. Nope, I'm going to try pleasure and all of these different avenues. And what was the result? He said, I deny myself nothing, verse 10. I refuse my heart no pleasure. Yet, verse 11, when I surveyed all my hands had done and had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. A chasing after the wind. It's like herding the wind, literally. Nothing was gained. You know, you just imagine him. He's on the cover of Forbes Billionaire magazine or whatever, the Billionaire Edition or whatever. He's there. It's the lifestyle of the rich and famous. I mean, he's got it all. The stuff of dreams. And yet he stands back now and he's looking over it all and he's going, what's wrong? It's still just the wind is just kind of going around here and it's not answering the inner need. So the third thing he tried was folly. In verse 12 of chapter 2. And what he's doing here is he's trying to understand, is there really an advantage? Or is it better to live a life that's guided by wisdom? Or just should I just let folly reign my life? Is wisdom really better than folly? I turn my thoughts to consider wisdom and also madness and folly. What more can the king's successor do than what has already been done? And at first he thought, yes, there's a benefit. There's advantages to being wise. I saw that wisdom is better than folly, just as light is better than darkness. The wise man has eyes in his head, while the fool walks around in darkness. It's so true, right? Especially he's talking, I believe, here about moral darkness, spiritual darkness. And people who are fools, just read the book of Proverbs, they have a lot of problems. And it's like a person walking around in the dark or with a blindfold on. You're tripping over things, running into things. Life is hard, it's difficult, because you keep doing stupid things. Whereas the wise person is like a person who's spiritually alive, spiritually alert. They can see, and they still trip, still fall, still have problems, but not the same kind, not the same way as the person who's spiritually blind. That's what he said. So I see the advantage. However, he said, but it's not all that good, because he said, but I came to realize, the end of verse 14, the same fate overtakes them both. In other words, we're all going to die. So what difference does it make? And to him, death is the end of the game. You know, whoever dies with the most toys wins. He's basically saying, whoever, you know, he's going to die here, and we're all dying the same. Nobody wins because we all die. And you say, well, but at least the person who's wise, they'll be remembered well, right? I mean, the fool's like, oh, glad he's gone. And the wise person, maybe they'll build buildings in his honor or name. But look what he said. The fate of the fool overtakes me also, verse 15. What do I do to gain to be wise? I said in my heart, this too is meaningless. For the wise man, like the fool, will not be remembered long. In the days to come, both will be forgotten. Like the fool, the wise must die. You're saying, Bob, you're doing it again. This is depressing. And you know what? That's exactly how he felt. And that's the idea. To shake us free from the things that we sink our lives into, the illusions that we adopt. We need to be burst and removed. He said in verse 17, so I hated my life. It's like I can't find the answer. I hated my life. And he tried one more thing, and that is materialism. You know, I'm going to pile it all up really high, and I'm going to keep it until the end. And then, you know, it's kind of like today's whoever dies with the most toys wins. So notice what he said in verse 18. I hated all the things I had toiled for under the sun because I must leave them to the one who comes after me. And who knows whether he will be a wise man or a fool. Yet he will have control over the work of which I poured my effort and skill under the sun. This too is meaningless. So my heart began to despair over all the toilsome labor under the sun. He's like, okay, this doesn't make any sense. So I work hard all my life in wisdom, and I amass all this stuff, and then I die, and it goes to some idiot that's going to do something with that's dumb. They're going to blow it all, throw it all away. And so it's meaningless. And I've seen this firsthand, and probably you have too. Some of you know this story about my family. It's kind of humorous, but it's kind of sad at the same time. My dad only had one brother. His brother's name was Bill, my Uncle Bill. They grew up in West Virginia. Uncle Bill was great. I loved Uncle Bill. He was a hard worker, very industrious kind of guy. He was married, and his wife, Patsy, they had no children. God never gave them any children. And his wife, Patsy, was truly a recluse. You know what a recluse is, right? So literally, in my life, I only saw her, I think, one time, maybe two. That's all I ever saw her. She was alone. She just stayed alone all her life. My uncle, I don't know if it's because they'd have children, it's because it was his bent or whatever, but as I said, he was very hardworking, industrious. He always had, that I would remember, at least a couple of jobs, and he began investments, and he did all kinds of things. And at one point, I know he had several businesses. He owned a car wash, he owned a Dairy Queen, he did all this stuff, and I don't know what else he might have had his hand in, but he was very industrious. My grandfather died, their dad. And apparently, he divided his estate between the two of them equally, so they very quickly did that because my uncle was kind of sick, his wife was sick. And he told my dad at the time, he said, I just want you to know I don't have any heirs. I'm just going to give you all of my assets anyway. All of my estate is going to go to you because I don't have any heirs. Well, the two of them, Bill and Patsy, were both sick. Patsy rebounded a little bit. Bill took a turn for the worse. He had cancer, and he ended up dying before Patsy did, which meant that since she was still alive, everything went to her. All of his estate, all half of my grandfather's estate, which had just recently been settled, went all to her. And then the kicker was this. She died a very short time later, and she left the entire estate, all of his life's toil, as it says here, and my grandfather, half of that, went to her two dogs, Buffy and Muffy. It's a true story. And so, my friends, what he's talking about is very true, right? I don't care if you give it to somebody you think they're going to do something good with. You have no control over it. What good did it do you? Well, that's what he's saying. For a man must do his work with wisdom, he said in verse 21, knowledge and skill, and then he must leave all he owns to someone who's not worked for it. In this case, it wasn't someone who didn't work for it, it was a couple of dogs who didn't even know the difference. And so like the teacher here, I can imagine my uncle and my grandfather rolling over in their grave lamenting, I worked my whole life for Buffy and Muffy. But whoever it goes to, recognize it goes to someone that you have no control over. And so he says, it just doesn't work. This is not the answer either. It's not there. It's not working for me. So does this mean that life is meaningless? We should just eat, drink, and be merry because tomorrow we die? Is that what he's saying? No, that's not what he's saying at all. He gives us the answer in verse 24. Look at verse 24. A man can do nothing better than to eat and drink and find satisfaction in his work. This too I see is from the hand of God. For without him, who can eat or find enjoyment? To the man who pleases him, God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness. But to the sinner, he gives the task of gathering and storing wealth to hand it over to the one who pleases God. This too is meaningless, a chasing after wind. So I want you to notice several things here. He's not saying we shouldn't pursue happiness or we shouldn't pursue pleasure. It's how we do it. So here's kind of the bottom line. Okay, let me say this. Just summarize what he experienced. He failed to find meaning by trying to understand through wisdom, right? He found no lasting value or satisfaction in pursuing pleasure. There was no advantage, he discovered, in being wise as opposed to being a fool. And there was no lasting benefit at all to accumulating possessions. There was just no lasting benefit. So here's the conclusion, the bottom line. All of our striving to find significance and satisfaction is futile unless we seek to find that in God. So if you read this, if you were to go back and read this afternoon, you were to read through this text we looked at today, you would find that God is barely mentioned until the very end. And I mentioned it earlier. It was all about myself. I built this. I tried this. I did this for myself. I amassed this. God isn't mentioned until we come to the end. And now we see God mentioned three times. And each time, you notice, if you look at them closely, each time it describes God giving something. So that's what it's about. He discovers this is where happiness comes from. That's where it comes from. Dave Gibson writes, "Far from being something that makes life in the present completely pointless, future death is light God shines on the present to change it." You see, that's what changed his perspective. Because he realized, I'm only going to be here a short time. It's a vapor. And it changed everything for him. Death can radically enable us to enjoy life. By revitalizing all that we do in our days under the sun, death can change us from people who want to control life for gain into people who find deep joy in receiving life as a gift. This, here, listen to this. This is the main message of Ecclesiastes in a nutshell. I think he hits it on the head. Life in God's world is a gift, not gain. It's a gift, not gain. And Jesus expanded on this. Jesus said, remember, what did he say? When we pray, give us to our Father, we say, give us this day our what? Daily bread. That's why we say grace, right? Because we acknowledge the meal before me didn't come from me. It wasn't from my paycheck. God provided it. And therefore, I can enjoy it as a gift from him, not some gain. And he talked about this as well. In Matthew 6, when he described, you know, the flowers in the field, you know, they're not toiling, and the sparrows, they're not worried. We shouldn't worry. He said, God's going to provide all that stuff for you. And then he said, seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. So, you know, I'm just going to pause. We're going to finish in just a moment. I just want to, again, come back to my own experience and how this has impacted me. Now, I'm not unlike you. I want to be happy. I want my life to have meaning and significance. I want to daily enjoy life. And yet sometimes I find it difficult to enter into that because I'm always wishing something was different. I wish it was different than it is. And I can't be content. I can't be happy until it's different. And it's like God in this is doing exactly as I said last week. He's exploding that idea in my head and helping me see, what in the world are you doing, Bob? God has blessed you beyond measure. And every single day, look at all the gifts he's giving you. Enjoy them. And find joy in what God is doing in your life rather than waiting for some new thing to change to be the ideal circumstance that you're hoping for. Enjoy right now because God has given you many gifts. Chuck Bentley is the CEO of Crown Financial Ministries. Some of you are familiar with that organization. He tells a story about a friend whose father, his life kind of symbolized exactly what we're talking about here. This friend of his described that when he was younger, grew up in a modest home family, and his dad was a hard worker who provided for the family. But as time went on, his dad worked more and more as he was developing his own business, and he was gone more and more. And early in his career, he bought a small lot on a beautiful lake. And because he didn't want to be extravagant, he just put a mobile home on the lake lot. And he put a deck around it. And the family used to spend every weekend there. And they would enjoy times playing games, being on the lake, looking at the lake. And they enjoyed that. But again, as his life progressed and as his business grew, his father became more and more engrossed in it, working longer and longer days, most evenings, in order to have meetings with clients. He was gone. The family felt more and more distant as time went on, as the father was completely engrossed in his business and making it grow and develop. And there were mergers and acquisitions as things progressed. And then the day came when his father sold his business. It was bought out by a big company. And his picture appeared on the cover of Wall Street Journal, the front page. Wall Street Journal. He'd kind of made it, right? And yet, the very day that his picture appeared there, disaster struck his life. Here he had spent his entire life chasing after all this, you know, to climb this ladder. He gets to the top, finally gets there, and then he discovers that he has a rare disease that's going to take his life in a matter of weeks. Before he died, he uttered these words, very heartfelt words, and they summarize exactly what the teacher has been talking about today. He said, I was happiest when sitting on the deck outside the trailer watching the sunset on the lake. I never needed anything more than that. Now, I want to take a moment before we close. It's a couple of minutes after 11, so I don't want to go too long here, but I want you to just respond for a moment. I invite you into what God is doing in my heart. I invite you to experience it as well. So I'm reading a book right now called Relentless. That's one of many. I read all the time. So I'm reading a book about relentless, and it describes how we need to look back in our lives at various points. We need to take a memory and pull it out and put it as a stone and build a memorial. And I've been doing that, some things that God has done and the blessings. I think back, God, what an amazing thing you did I forgot about. And so I want you right now, would you just take a moment before we close, in light of all that we've heard here today about the pursuit of happiness and grasping for it rather than receiving it as a gift. And would you just take a moment and bow your head and try to think back. Can you think of a gift that God has given you? At a certain point in your life, a very pivotal stage, something God did. He didn't owe you. God did it for you. He gave it to you. And can you just today say, God, thank you. Thank you for your goodness. And even though your life may not be the way you want it to be right now today, can you just say, today there's so many good things. And rather than long for something different, can I just be happy today and content and find joy in what you've given me today? And one thing I would urge you to do, just in light of this and same way that I've been describing, is just to maybe to jot it down. You may not be a journal writer or whatever. If you are, you could write it down there. Just look for one or two things that you can say, God, you've given me these gifts. Write them down. But if not, just maybe even put it in the notes in your phone. Say, you know, I can think of people he put in my life at certain times and other things he's done. Just write it down so you remember God's gifts. And then here's the other thing. Today, when you leave this place and when you have lunch, I urge you to enjoy it as a gift from God. You say, this is really good. God, you are good. Thank you. You are so good. And I long for the day that I'll be with you and everything will be perfect. But until then, thank you that I don't have to chase after all these things. I can just find joy and happiness and contentment in you and the gifts that you give me today. Oh, God.